John. When he heard the order, Sir Alistair's mouth twisted into a semblance of a smile, but his eyes remained as cold and hard as flint. So, the bastard boy sends me out to die.
Die,
cried Mormont's raven.
Die, die, die.
You are not helping. John swatted the bird away. The bastard boy is sending you out to range, to find our foes, and kill them if need be. You are skilled with a blade. You are master at arms here and at Eastwatch. Thorn touched the hilt of his longsword. I have squandered a third of my life trying to teach the rudiments of swordplay to churls, muttonheads, and knaves. Small good that will do me in those woods.
Diamond will be with you, and another seasoned ranger.
We'll learn you what you need to know, sir.
Diamond told Thorn, cackling.
Teach you how to wipe your high-born arse with leaves, just like a proper ranger.
Kedge Whiteye laughed at that, and Blackjack Bulwer spat. Sir Alistair only said,
You would like me to refuse. Then you could ack off me head, same as you did for Slint. I not give you that pleasure, bastard. You'd best pray that it's a wildling blade that kills me, though. The ones the others kill don't stay dead, and they remember. I'm coming back, Lord Snow.
I pray you do. John would never count Sir Alistair Thorne amongst his friends, but he was still a brother. No one ever said you had to like your brothers. It was no easy thing to send men into the wild, knowing that the chances were good that they might never return. They are all seasoned men, John told himself. But his uncle Benjen and his rangers had been seasoned men as well, and the haunted forest had swallowed them up without a trace. When two of them finally came straggling back to the wall, it had been as whites. Not for the first time or the last, John Snow found himself wondering what had become of Benjen Stark. Perhaps the rangers would come upon some sign of them, he told himself, never truly believing it. Dywin would lead one ranging, Blackjack Bulwer and Kedge Whiteye the other two. They at least were eager for the duty.
Feels good to have a horse under me again, Dywin said at the gate, sucking on his wooden teeth. Begging your pardon, my lord, but we was all of us getting splinters up our arses from sitting about.
No man in Castle Black knew the woods as well as Dywin did, the trees and streams, the plants that could be eaten, the ways of predator and prey. Thorn is in better hands than he deserves. John watched the riders go from atop the wall. Three parties, each of three men, each carrying a pair of ravens. From on high their garrons looked no larger than ants, and John could not tell one ranger from another. He knew them, though. Every name was graven on his heart. Eight good men, he thought, and one, well, we shall see. When the last of the riders had disappeared into the trees, John Snow rode the winch cage down with Dolorous Ed. A few scattered snowflakes were falling as they made their slow descent, dancing on the gusty wind. One followed the cage down, drifting just beyond the bars. It was falling faster than they were descending, and from time to time it would vanish beneath them. Then a gust of wind would catch it and push it upwards once again. John could have reached through the bars and caught it, if he had wished.
I had a frightening dream last night, my lord, Dolorous Ed confessed. You were my steward, eh? Fetching my food and cleaning up my leavings. I was Lord Commander, with never a moment's peace.
John did not smile. Your nightmare, my life. Cutterpike's galleys were reporting ever-increasing numbers of free folk along the wooded shores to the north and east of the wall. Camps had been seen, half-built rafts, even the hull of a broken cog that someone had begun repairing. The wildlings always vanished into the woods when seen, no doubt to re-emerge as soon as Pike's ships had passed. Meanwhile, Sir Dennis Mallister was still seeing fires in the night north of the gorge, Both commanders were asking for more men.
And where am I to get more men?
John had sent 10 of the Molestown wildlings to each of them. Green boys, old men, some wounded and infirm, but all capable of doing work of one sort or another. Far from being pleased, Pike and Mallister had both written back to complain.
When I asked for men, I had in mind men of the Night's Watch, trained and disciplined, whose loyalty I should never have reason to doubt, wrote Sir Dennis.
Cutter Pike was blunter. I could hang them from the wall as a warning to other wildlings to stay away, but I don't see any other use for them.
Maester Harmoon wrote for him.
I wouldn't trust such to clean my chamber pot, and 10 is not enough.
The iron cage moved downward at the end of its long chain, creaking and rattling, until it finally jerked to a halt a foot above the ground at the base of the wall. Dolorous Ed pushed open the door and hopped down, his boots breaking the crust of the last snow. John followed. Outside the armory, Iron Emmett was still urging on his charges in the yard. The song of steel on steel woke a hunger in John. It reminded him of warmer, simpler days when he had been a boy at Winterfell, matching blades with Rob under the watchful eye of Sir Roderick Cassel. Sir Roderick, too, had fallen, slain by Theon Turncloak and his iron men as he tried to retake Winterfell. The great stronghold of House Stark was a scorched desolation. All my memories are poisoned. When Iron Emmett spied him, he raised a hand, and combat ceased.
Lord Commander, how may we serve you?
With your three best. Emmett grinned.
Aaron, Emric, Jace.
Horse and Hop-Robin fetched padding for the Lord Commander, along with a ringmail hauberk to go over it, and greaves, gorget and half-helm. A black shield rimmed with iron for his left arm, a blunted longsword for his right hand. The sword gleamed silvery grey in the dawn light, almost new. One of the last to come from Donald's forge. A pity he didn't live long enough to put an edge on it. The blade was shorter than Longclaw, but made of common steel, which made it heavier. His blows would be a little slower. It will serve. John turned to face his foes.
Come!
Which one do you want first? Asked Aaron.
All three of you, at once.
Three on one? Jace was incredulous. That wouldn't be fair.
He was one of Conway's latest bunch, a cobbler's son from Fair Isle. Maybe that explained it.
True? Come here.
When he did, John's blade slammed him alongside his head, knocking him off his feet. In the blink of an eye, the boy had a boot on his chest and a sword point at his throat. War is never fair, John told him. It's 2-on-1 now, and you're dead. When he heard gravel crunch, he knew the twins were coming. Those two will make rangers yet. He spun, blocking Aaron's cut with the edge of his shield and meeting Emric's with his sword.
Those aren't spears, he shouted. Get in close.
He went to the attack to show them how it was done. Emric first. He slashed at his head and shoulders, right and left and right again. The boy got his shield up and tried a clumsy counter-cut. John slammed his own shield into Emric's and brought him down with a blow to the lower leg, none too soon, because Aaron was on him, with a crunching cut to the back of his thigh which sent him to one knee. That will leave a bruise. He caught the next cut on his shield, then lurched back to his feet and drove Aaron across the yard. He's quick, he thought, as the long swords kissed once and twice and thrice. But he needs to get stronger. When he saw relief in Aaron's eyes, he knew Emric was behind him. He came around and dealt him a cut to the back of the shoulders that sent him crashing into his brother. By that time, Jace had found his feet, so John put him down again. I hate it when dead men get up. You'll feel the same the day you meet a wight. Stepping back, he lowered his sword.
The big crow can peck the little crows, growled a voice behind him. But has he belly enough to fight a man?
Rattleshirt was leaning against a wall. A coarse stubble covered his sunken cheeks, and thin brown hair was blowing across his little yellow eyes. You flatter yourself, John said.
Aye, but I'll flatten you.
Stannis burned the wrong man.
No!
The wildling grinned at him through a mouth of brown and broken teeth.
He burned the man he had to burn, for all the world to see. We all do what we have to do, Snow, even kings.
Emmet, find some armour for him. I want him in steel, not old bones. Once clad in mail and plate, the Lord of Bones seemed to stand a little straighter. He seemed taller, too, his shoulders thicker and more powerful than John would have thought. It's the armour, not the man, he told himself. Even Sam could appear almost formidable, clad head to heel in Donald Noy's steel. The wildling waved away the shield Horse offered him. Instead, he asked for a two-handed sword.
There's a sweet sound, he said, slashing at the air. Flap closer, Snow, or I mean to make your feathers fly.
John rushed him hard. Rattleshirt took a step backwards and met the charge with a two-handed slash. If John had not interposed his shield, it might have staved his breastplate in and broken half his ribs. The force of the blow staggered him for a moment and sent a solid jolt up his arm. He hits harder than I would have thought. His quickness was another unpleasant surprise. They circled round each other, trading blow for blow. The Lord of Bones gave as good as he was getting. By right, the two-handed greatsword should have been a deal more cumbersome than John's longsword, but the wildling wielded it with blinding speed. Arn Emmett's fledglings cheered their Lord Commander at the start, but the relentless speed of Rattleshirt's attack soon beat them down to silence.
He cannot keep this up for long,
John told himself as he stopped another blow. The impact made him grunt. Even dulled, the greatsword cracked his pinewood shield and bent the iron rim.
He will tire soon. He must.
John slashed at the wildling's face, and Rattleshirt pulled back his head. He hacked down at Rattleshirt's calf, only to have him deftly leap the blade. The greatsword crashed down onto John's shoulder, hard enough to ding his pauldron and numb the arm beneath. John backed away. The Lord of Bones came after, chortling. He has no shield, John reminded himself, and that monster sword's too cumbersome for parries. I should be landing two blows for every one of his. Somehow he wasn't, though, and the blows he did land were having no effect. The wildling always seemed to be moving away or sliding sideways, so John's longsword glanced off a shoulder or an arm. Before long, he found himself giving more ground, trying to avoid the other's crashing cuts and failing half the time. His shield had been reduced to kindling. He shook it off his arm. Sweat was running down his face and stinging his eyes beneath his helm. He is too strong and too quick, he realized, and with that great sword he has weight and reach on me. It would have been a different fight if John had been armed with Longclaw, but his chance came on Rattleshirt's next backswing. John threw himself forward, bullying into the other man, and they went down together, legs entangled. Steel slammed on steel. Both men lost their swords as they rolled on the hard ground. The wildling drove a knee between John's legs. John lashed out with a mail fist. Somehow Rattleshirt ended up on top. With John's head in his hands, he smashed it against the ground, then wrenched his visor open.
If I had me a dagger, you'd be less than I by now,
he snarled, before Horse and Iron Emmett dragged him off the Lord Commander's chest.
Let go me, you bloody crows, he roared.
John struggled to one knee. His head was ringing and his mouth was full of blood. He spat it out and said, well fought.
You flatter yourself, crow. I never broke a sweat.
Next time you will, said John. Dolorous Ed helped him to his feet and unbuckled his helm.
It had acquired several deep dents that had not been there when he donned it. "Release him!" John tossed the helm to Hop Robin, who dropped it.
"My lord," said Iron Emmet, "he threatened your life, we all heard. He said that if he had a dagger..."
"He does have a dagger, right there on his belt." "There is always someone quicker and stronger," Sir Roderick had once told John and Rob. "He's the man you want to face in the yard, before you need to face his like upon a battlefield."
"Lord Snow,"
a soft voice said. He turned to find Clytus standing beneath the broken archway, a parchment in his hand. "From Stannis?" John had been hoping for some word from the king. The Night's Watch took no part in you, and it should not matter to him which king emerged triumphant. Somehow it did. "Is it Deepwood?"
No, my lord."
Clytus thrust the parchment forward. It was tightly rolled and sealed with a button of hard pink wax. "Only the Dreadfort uses pink sealing wax." John ripped off his gauntlet, took the letter, cracked the seal. When he saw the signature, he forgot the battering Rattleshirt had given him. "Ramsay Bolton, Lord of the Hornwood," it read, in a huge spiky hand. The brown ink came away in flakes when John brushed it with his thumb. Beneath Bolton's signature, Lord Dustin, Lady Serwin, and four Risewells had appended their own marks and seals. A cruder hand had drawn the giant of House Umber.
"Might we know what it says, my lord?" asked Iron Emmet.
John saw no reason not to tell him. "Moat Cailin is taken. The flayed corpses of the Iron Men have been nailed to posts along the King's Road. Roose Bolton summons all leal lords to Barrowton to affirm their loyalty to the Iron Throne and celebrate his son's wedding to—" His heart seemed to stop for a moment. "No, that is not possible. She died in King's Landing with father."
"Lord Snow?"
Clytus peered at him closely with his dim pink eyes.
"Are you unwell? You seem—" "He's to marry Arya Stark, my little sister."
John could almost see her in that moment, long-faced and gawky, all knobby knees and sharp elbows with her dirty face and tangled hair. They would wash the one and comb the other, he did not doubt, but he could not imagine Arya in a wedding gown, nor Ramsay Bolton's bed. "No matter how afraid she is, she will not show it. If he tries to lay a hand on her, she'll fight him." "Your sister," Iron Emmet said, "how old is she?" "By now she'd be 11, John thought. "Still a child." "I have no sister. Only brothers. Only you." Lady Caitlin would have rejoiced to hear those words, he knew. That did not make them easier to say. His fingers closed around the parchment. Would that they could crush Ramsay Bolton's throat as easily. Clytus cleared his throat.
"Will there be an answer?"
John shook his head and walked away. By nightfall, the bruises that Rattleshirt had given him had turned purple. "They'll go yellow before they fade away," he told Mormont's raven. "I'll look as sallow as the Lord of Bones."
"Bones!"
the bird agreed.
"Bones! Bones!"
He could hear the faint murmur of voices coming from outside, although the sound was too weak to make out words. They sound 1,000 leagues away. It was Lady Melisandre and her followers at their night fire. Every night at dusk the Red Woman led her followers in their twilight prayer, asking her Red God to see them through the dark. For the night is dark and full of terrors. With Stannis and most of the Queen's men gone, her flock was much diminished. 50 of the free folk up from Molestown, the handful of guards the king had left her, perhaps 12 black brothers who had taken her Red God for their own. John felt as stiff as a man of 60 years. Dark dreams, he thought, and guilt. His thoughts kept returning to Arya. "There is no way I can help her. I put all kin aside when I said my words. If one of my men told me his sister was in peril, I would tell him that was no concern of his. Once a man had said the words, his blood was black. Black as a bastard's heart. He'd had Micken make a sword for Aria once, a bravo's blade, made small to fit her hand. Needle. He wondered if she still had it. Stick them with a pointy end, he'd told her, but if she tried to stick the bastard, it could mean her life.
Snow,
muttered Lord Mormon's raven.
Snow! Snow!
Suddenly, he could not suffer it a moment longer. He found Ghost outside his door, gnawing on the bone of an ox to get at the marrow. When did you get back? The direwolf got to his feet, abandoning the bone to come padding after John. Molly and Keg stood inside the door, leaning on their spears.
A cruel cold out there, my lord,
warned Molly through his tangled orange beard.
Will you be out long?
No, I just need a breath of air. John stepped out into the night. The sky was full of stars, and the wind was gusting along the wall. Even the moon looked cold. There were goosebumps all across its face. Then the first gust caught him, slicing through his layers of wool and leather to set his teeth to chattering. He stalked across the yard, into the teeth of that wind. His cloak flapped loudly from his shoulders. Ghost came after. Where am I going? What am I doing? Castle Black was still and silent, its halls and towers dark. My seat, John Snow reflected. My hall, my home, my command. A ruin. In the shadow of the wall, the direwolf brushed up against his fingers. For half a heartbeat, the night came alive with a thousand smells, and John Snow heard the crackle of the crust breaking on a patch of old snow. Someone was behind him, he realized suddenly. Someone who smelled warm as a summer day. When he turned, he saw Ygritte. She stood beneath the scorched stones of the Lord Commander's tower, cloaked in darkness and in memory. The light of the moon was in her hair, her red hair, kissed by fire. When he saw that, John's heart leapt into his mouth. Ygritte, he said. Lord Snow. The voice was Melisandre's. Surprise made him recoil from her. Lady Melisandre? He took a step backwards. I mistook you for someone else. At night, all robes were grey. Yet suddenly hers were red. He did not understand how he could have taken her for Ygritte. She was taller, thinner, older, though the moonlight washed years from her face. Mist rose from her nostrils and from pale hands naked to the night. You will freeze your fingers off, John warned. If that is the will of R'hllor, night's powers cannot touch one whose heart is bathed in God's holy fire. Your heart does not concern me, just your hands. The heart is all that matters. Do not despair, Lord Snow. Despair is a weapon of the enemy whose name may not be spoken. Your sister is not lost to you. I have no sister. The words were knives. What do you know of my heart, priestess? What do you know of my sister? Melisandre seemed amused. What is her name, this little sister, that you do not have? Aria. His voice was hoarse. My half-sister, truly. For you are bastard-born. I had not forgotten. I have seen your sister in my fires, fleeing from this marriage they have made for her, coming here to you, a girl in grey on a dying horse. I have seen it plain as day. It has not happened yet, but it will. She gazed at Ghost. May I touch your wolf? The thought made John uneasy. Best not. He will not harm me. You call him Ghost, yes? Yes, but Ghost. Melisandre made the word a song. The direwolf padded toward her. Weary, he stalked about her in a circle, sniffing. When she held out her hand, he smelled that too, then shoved his nose against her fingers. John let out a white breath. He is not always so warm. Warmth calls to warmth, John Snow. Her eyes were two red stars shining in the dark. At her throat, her ruby gleamed, a third eye glowing brighter than the others. John had seen ghost eyes blazing red the same way, when they caught the light just right. "Ghost," he called, "to me." The direwolf looked at him as if he were a stranger. John frowned in disbelief. "That's queer." "You think so?" She knelt and scratched Ghost behind his ear. "Your wall is a queer place, but there is power here. If you will use it, power in you and in this beast, you resist it, and that is your mistake. Embrace it, use it." "I am not a wolf," he thought. "And how would I do that?" "I can show you." Melisandre draped one slender arm over Ghost, and the dire wolf licked her face. "The Lord of Light, in his wisdom, made us male and female, two parts of a greater whole. In our joining there is power, power to make life, power to make light, power to cast shadows." "Shadows?" The world seemed darker when he said it. "Every man who walks the earth casts a shadow on the world. Some are thin and weak, others long and dark. You should look behind you, Lord Snow. The moon has kissed you and etched your shadow upon the ice 20 feet tall." John glanced over his shoulder. The shadow was there, just as she had said, etched in moonlight against the wall. A girl in grey, on a dying horse, he thought. "Coming here to you, Arya." He turned back to the Red Priestess. John could feel her warmth. "She has power." The thought came unbidden, seizing him with iron teeth. But this was not a woman he cared to be indebted to, not even for his little sister. "Darla told me something once, Val's sister, Mance Raider's wife. She said that sorcery was a sword without a hilt. There is no safe way to grasp it." "A wise woman," Melisandre rose, her red robes stirring in the wind. "A sword without a hilt is still a sword, though, and a sword is a fine thing to have when foes are all about. Hear me now, Jon Snow. 9 crows flew into the White Wood to find your foes for you. 3 of them are dead. They have not died yet, but their death is out there waiting for them, and they ride to meet it. You sent them forth to be your eyes in the darkness, but they will be eyeless when they return to you. I have seen their pale dead faces in my flames, empty sockets, weeping blood." She pushed her red hair back, and her red eyes shone. "You do not believe me. You will. The cost of that belief will be 3 lives. A small price to pay for wisdom, some might say, but not one you had to pay. Remember that when you behold the blind and ravaged faces of your dead, and come that day, take my hand." The mist rose from her pale flesh, and for a moment it seemed as if pale, sorcerous flames were playing about her fingers. "Take my hand," she said again, "and let me save your sister."